informative, and engaging.
Rick Munn.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we're into hour number three of the show. Yes, we've made it through two full hours of ranting and raving and throwing rocks, casting aspersions, talking about skullduggery and shenanigans all over the world. Yes, all over the world, because that's what we do. We're a global station, but we're not a globalist station. A global station, I tell you. Before I welcome my third and final guest of the show today, I just want to have a little look at some things that are popping up in the media and on Twitter in specifically. Elon Musk, who some people think is going to save us and give us all freedom of speech and ride in on a white horse somewhere and kick censors into touch. Well, Elon has told us today that he is currently spending less than 5% of his time on the Twitter acquisition. He's still focused on rockets to Mars. He's still focused on global surveillance systems. He's still focused on sticking microchips in our brains. So yeah, Twitter is not high on his list of priorities, despite what some people out there would like to think. And of course, he's been telling us about how he's not going to vote Democrat anymore. He's going to vote Republican, and that's going to cause a lot of trouble and a lot of hit pieces against him. Well, lo and behold, the attacks have begun. There's some seedy photographs of some seedy hotel rooms and no doubt some seedy actions going on. I haven't bothered soiling my eyes with those. But yeah, be prepared for the hit pieces to begin on Mr. Elon Musk, as they have began with TNT Radio this week. We've been getting our own flack from the Australian press, which is fantastic. They're telling us that we're not supportive of the narrative. They're telling us that we're not towing the line with vaccines, etc. Good, because someone has to take a stand and put their feet on the ground and draw a line in the sand and say, hell no, we're not going to bow and scrape to these globalists. And that is TNT Radio. Autumn COVID shot booster rollout will be underway. The NHS have recommended that for vulnerable adults. Dare I say, they're the last people that need to be injected. And over 65s, say the JCVI. How those people are walking free, I do not know. They should be jailed or worse, but we'll not go into that. And lastly, let's hop across to Brazil. Jair Bolsonaro from Brazil said he will not sign the WHO pandemic treaty. National sovereignty is not something to be handed over to the WHO or other entities to be renounced to join a club of seemingly advanced nations. I'm sorry to say this, but watch your back, Bolsonaro. You may just disappear, slip on a bar of soap. The brakes in your car may fail sometime soon, and we'll be talking about you in the past tense because you're not towing the globalist line. But anyway, I digress. Don't go away, you lovely people. We shall be right back. This is TNT Radio.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind.
And some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I am super happy. I mean, genuinely super happy to be joined for the first time today on TNT Radio by Karen Ward. And Karen is living on the island of Ireland, just like myself. And whether she knows this or not, she happens to reside in a place that's very close to my heart, a little place in the south of Ireland, down in County Cork, a little place called Kinsale. That is somewhere I have frequented many times and somewhere that I have very, very fond memories of. So Karen Ward, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm sitting here in my clinic in Kinsale. The tourist season hasn't hit full swing yet, Rick. So I'm where I actually am. My parents ran a B&B for a long time. I wonder if you ever stayed.
Well, I'll tell you, I can name some B&Bs in Kinsale. I stayed in one in a place called Gardwell, which is down at the bottom of the town, in a little place called Kieran's Folk House Inn. Kieran's Folk House Inn in Gardwell in Kinsale. And I have dined. There's a big restaurant. I think at one stage Keith Floyd was involved in the White House, right down at the bottom of the town. I've been to the Spaniard. I've been to Charles Fort. I've been all over the place. I am a big fan of Kinsale.
You've been around, but it's really funny. So in one of my previous lives, when I was doing a PhD in applied psychology a long time ago, I was like a broke college student, and I ran a restaurant in the White House. It was the restaurant Antibes, because Kinsale is, as you know, twinned with Antibes in the south of France. So I could have served you a glass of wine.
Imagine that. So were you actually working in or alongside the White House then, yeah?
Oh, I worked in it. I was in the bar for many years, pulling pints at Murphy's, but I actually was involved in running the restaurant. I was a waitress for a very long time.
I had a feed in there. And I'll tell you when it was. It was back in, I think it was either 1995 or 1996/97. So it was there maybe three times between 95 and 97. Were you there?
I was there, I was behind the bar, and it's before they did this big renovation job, and we had Keith Floyd would come in a lot with his partners at the time, and I used to look after him at the bar, and he'd come in and go, Karen, darling, buy yourself a drink, and he'd pop a load of pennies on the counter, and if I could have been lucky, I would have scrounged enough together for a bottle of Lucozade, but they were the heydays, oh my God. Mm-hmm. They were the heydays, and then of course, when we had the official opening of the White House restaurant, the White House came and the Kennedys came. And of course, because I was always one of these people who they knew they could put me in front of a restaurant or someone off the street and I'd treat them exactly the same way. So I was in charge of looking after the champagne and serving Patrick Kennedy. And it was just the most hilarious. Every time I moved to talk to him, the FBI jumped with their headsets and it was just, I still tell stories about it to this day. So that is really funny. I love it when the world is 2 degrees of separation, Rick, huh?
Well, imagine that. No, well, I know Cairns isn't too far away from it. I mean, like everywhere is within walking distance of everywhere else. But actually, they've been there at a time where we probably have met at some point. I don't recall you. You probably don't recall me. I could have been rolling around on the floor after a few pints of Murphy's. I don't know. But here we are.
No, here we are in another guise. But, you know, I always say, was talking to my kids during the week, it's like, Mommy, were you always awake? And I went, well, back then we didn't call it being awake. We just kind of called it knowing what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. Well, you and I have been in contact for a little while now, but scheduling and comings and goings and one thing and another, here we finally are. It is Friday the 20th of May and we are connected and we're talking. I want to tell the people a little bit about yourself. Karen is on Twitter. First of all, if you want to follow her on Twitter, at Karen Ward Health, K-A-R-E-N-W-A-R-D Health, at Karen Ward Health. And she also has a website, kwoptimumhealth.ie. So undoubtedly, I want to believe, as with every person that I speak with, someone out there will hear something that is applicable to them and doubtless want to follow up on it. So check out Karen's website, kwoptimumhealth.ie. And in a nutshell, and I'm going to let you expand on this a little bit, but Karen is a naturopathic nutritionist. I had to say that really slowly. A naturopathic nutritionist based out of Conseil in Ireland. You have... you have extensive experience in personal health in terms of your own journey along the road in terms of various ailments and issues that you can talk to us about. This is all on your website. The psychology aspect of things, the nutritional aspect of things. Tell me how you ended up in the position that you're in at the minute in a clinic in Conseil. What's so special about you? Why are people going to you and not somewhere else?
Prior to me ending up in my clinic in Conseil, talking to people on a daily basis about nutritional therapy and the role of diet and food and health and mental health and physical health, I was a stressed out engineer working for a telecoms company called Motorola for many, many years. Mm-hmm. I was the project manager, and ironically now I'm like, get off your phone. But I was involved in architecting 4G for my sins with a group of a lot of other people. And it was during this time when the globe began to change and we were all made redundant. So horrible word, really, isn't it? So it was during that time Motorola shut down and I became very, very sick. I had a very steep, fast decline. I had gut problems my whole life. Like the doctor said, I was a hypochondriac looking for attention. It turns out he was a bit wrong. And it was after the birth of my first baby back in 2007, after Motorola, my job at Motorola was finished. I was at home and I started to develop serious gut problems. And really the next 6 months were a blur. That year I got married, I lost my dog. You know what we're doing, to talk about stress today and how food can maybe help, but there was a lot of little hits to the system that year. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the whole prospect of having a baby and being depleted and sleep deprived, which I'm also going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Now, Crohn's can kill you. I had no idea at the time how serious it was. I started losing loads of weight and unintentionally. And of course, you always worry about something very sinister. But to make a very, very long story short, if anyone wants to hear the long story, it's on the website. But I ended up being rushed into hospital for life-saving surgery, and I was very lucky to make it out the other end. And it was literally on the hospital bed, Rick, where they cut me up, stitched me back together and cut out the dodgy bits, that I started asking questions about, you know, did food have anything to do with this? Is there anything I can do for Crohn's now that I know I have it? And of course, surprisingly, the answer was, or not surprisingly, the answer was no, you can eat whatever you want. You just have to take your drugs. And you're so bad, we'll probably see you back for more surgery in a year. I'm very happy to report that was 15 years ago now, and I am not on medication. Now, I'm not purporting, if you have a serious chronic disease, not to take medication. However, diet and lifestyle plays a massive role in our health. So that was it. I got sick and I nearly died, and I went back to college. I wanted to know everything. And I studied nutritional therapy, and I then began lecturing for the college a few years after, still do 7-8 years later. And that was it. It was like, that's a really short version, but I was so amazed at the power of food in helping the body heal and repair, that I became a very excited proponent of nutritional therapy. And even now, you know, when people come into clinic, they're like, they come in with real dire conditions and diagnoses, and people are really, really sick. And they leave feeling empowered, and they leave feeling like that there's actually something that they can do. And maybe there is a little bit of hope that's been so taken away from them with the, you know, the delivering of the diagnosis that they have. So, you know what, Rick, I've no magic bullets, but, you know, just listening to a person's story and trying to pick it apart, I do feel like being an engineer for all those years in a telecoms company gives me a pretty good ability to pick apart root causes and try to help people figure things out. So that's kind of, anyway, I could go on, but I won't.
No, well, hopefully you will, actually, because this is what I'm trying to give people that are listening. I mean, I know someone that's going to be listening to this today. For example, I know at least one person that is tuning into this today that is in the position where they're tortured by, you know, bowel habits and intestinal problems. It's usually written off as IBS. You go to the doctor, it's IBS. Take these tablets, you know, do 10,000 steps a day a few times a week, and then, you know, you'll manage, or you'll learn to live with it. And the old pharmaceutical mantra rings true. What is it that every patient cured is a customer lost? So they, you know, I'm very skeptical, especially over the last 2 years, about you know, the aims and objectives and motives of big pharma and the products that they're bringing out. And dare I say, GPs as well, who are being incentivized to prescribe drugs and actually getting uplifts depending on what they prescribe for whatever case or situation. I did have a read over your website, and, you know, from a young age, you suffered. Let's just say, then you were diagnosed with IBS, and then it manifested as Crohn's disease. You had to have a big operation. You had I think it was your right side of your bowels was cut out. You were told, take these tablets and get on with life. And at that point, then you said, well, hang on a minute. Is there nothing could be done, you know, holistically about this? And then you started doing a little bit of digging. I am sure there are many other people in the same position. There's somebody I know recently that had, it seemed to be a violent reaction to, like, paprika. They were taking paprika into that, and when they took it, literally they were vomiting all night long, retching, and their guts were shredded. This just started. They took it once, and then they thought maybe it was just a fluke, so they tried it again, same repetition. Now this person's vowing, I'll never go near that again, I never want to suffer those horrors again. So there are certainly certain foods and certain additives that can stimulate certain violent reactions in the gut. I'm sure they're different from person to person. Would I be right in saying there could be triggers that appear at certain times? Maybe you've got away all your life living a certain way and having a certain diet, and then all of a sudden, bang, something hits you, and it's game over for the gut.
Yeah, and I suppose that, you know, I would meet people a lot that are saying, you know, for sure I was grand for the last 40 years. I was eating everything I wanted, and I often describe, you know, our gut and our whole digestive system is, it's literally one cell thick. It's phenomenally delicate. and it's a holding tank. And when we eat food, we think we're being fed, but we're feeding our gut microbes. And we're also hoping that the digestive juices that we make when we're not stressed are working really well to help us break down those foods. So you could have previously tolerated something because your bugs were in good nick. They weren't over sanitized and destroyed by, you know, medications and antibiotics and God forbid the V. And stress, which is a chronic, it has a direct impact on what we call your microbiome, which is the trillions of bugs that live in you and on you. And they are our friends. They are our microbes. Mm-hmm. They are our frontline immune fighting services that have been impacted hugely. And when they get impacted, our resiliency to life, to the environment, to food, and to previously tolerated substances can be broken. So there can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And the irony is we all have one. So to that person who may have been fine with paprika all along, because that gut lining is so impacted by cortisol, the stress hormone, which we all know, you know, stress and fear is designed to make us wear down and permeable. We're leaky. And like the gut is not like Vegas, right? What goes on in the gut does not stay in the gut. It gets out into systemic circulation. And your immune system, that again, we use the paprika because it's a good example. Your immune system obviously went, I don't like the look of you. And it mounts something called a C3. It's called a complement reaction. We do tests, as in we, but I do a lot of laboratory-based functional medicine testing to ask the right questions of the body. So there's ways to find out. Now, obviously, if you have a really acute reaction, you're going to know, hopefully, if you're tuned in. But there's a lot of people with a collection of lots of seemingly disconnected symptoms that are over-medicated. And the new symptoms are often side effects of the previous medication. And then there's a new medication to offset the side effects of the previous one. Mm-hmm. But there's ways to test and ask the body questions with really simple finger prick testing that assesses foods, that substances, herbs, and natural substances. So I suppose to kind of tie it back into the question, when we've been worn down and our barriers are eroded and our gut microbes have been through the war they've been through and they've been deemed public enemy number one, when in fact we are more microbe than man. You know, the irony when I see people sanitizing, I just kind of to myself think, what are you doing? You are more microbial than human. You're killing yourself slowly. Which is the sad reality of where we're at, right? We're like antimicrobialing ourselves.
That's right. And I mean, just one thing, actually, in a way, it could be a blessing in disguise if you have a valid reaction to something, because at least that way the alarm bells go off. If you have a low level reaction that just simply depletes you or runs you down or leaves you sort of operating at 80%, you may allow that to go on for year after year after year before you do something. So in a way, maybe a valid reaction to something at a point in time is not a bad thing if it flags it up and it makes you tread with extreme caution when it comes to that particular substance or whatever you perceive that substance to be. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to look at this business of stress, because I defy anyone out there that's listening to say that they haven't been put under extreme stress or more stress than normal over the last 2 years. So this is definitely something that affects everyone, and not just ourselves as people, but our insides, our guts. And listen, you don't want to mess with those things, because when they go wrong, boy, do they go wrong. So don't go away. You're listening to Karen Ward. I'm Rick Munn on TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
I thought, well, that's kind of like the end of the war. And then there was another piece that I saw in, I believe it was the Jerusalem Post, which said that two sides are still talking at very high levels. So I guess what I'm wondering is, why am I having to look for that kind of information? Why isn't that top of mind during the newscasts, who are instead focusing on refugees and crying babies wrapped in Ukrainian flags waiting at the border? I mean, it would seem to me that those concessions by Zelensky might be a game changer.
Well, yes, but it's a game changer that doesn't favour the current geopolitical, should we say, motivations and aims of the US at the moment.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
I was drawn to the Navy by my sense of adventure. I'm a writer, so if it's the crew's job to look after the ship, then it's my job to look after the crew. It's pretty amazing. Being in charge of pay and allowances is really important. And I love it because they're incredible people. And helping them with personal matters, you really see the positive effect of what you do. There's nothing more rewarding than that. I was born in Beckenham, but I was made in the Royal Navy. Start your journey. Search Made in the Royal Navy.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else.
You guys are talking about everything that I just wanted to ask about.
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, welcome back. I'm joined this morning by Karen Ward, operating out of Kinsale in Ireland. Actually, as those ads are playing, I'm getting a little bit distracted in my head from our topic of conversation. Is there a place, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I've got the wrong place, called the Skeffington in Kinsale?
Not the Skeffington. No.
Maybe I'm thinking of Galway. But there is a place called the Spaniard. I know that much. If you're heading out of town towards Charles Fort, there's there's a hard V in the road, and there's an old bar there called the Spaniard. They do a mean toasted sandwich, by the way, if you're listening in from Kinsale. I advise you to get yourself out to the Spaniard. What do you say? Do you endorse that place?
I do, and you know, before all this craziness, they used to do a fabulous thing on Tuesday nights where the fishermen would come in and they'd cook the mackerel or the sardines on the fire and have pints of Murphy's and brown bread. Wow. And always gorgeous. Yeah, happy. I haven't been to the pub for a while now, you know, but
I'm the same, actually, back, believe it or not. I haven't drank really since 1998, but I do have some very fond memories of quaffing a pint of the black stuff in Kinsale in various establishments, not just one or two. I did a little tour of the town. I've got some photographs. I'm going to dig them out, actually. I'll take a picture and send them through. Say, that's me outside this place. It is. But there's a good one I know I have of myself and my then fiance. We toured around the south a lot, and we were in Kilkenny a lot. Then we would have went down to Kinsale. Then we would have headed out to Dingle, and then we would have moved up to Galway, Connemara, Sligo, and then came back in via Donegal into Belfast again. So I was fond of touring the south, I tell you. consuming some things that I maybe shouldn't have, which is what we're talking about a little bit. We're talking about stress as well. Mix in something that's like a bad stimulant into your body, mix that in with stress, and you have potentially a lot of problems. Would you say that stress is the main contributing factor towards gut functionality, or is there something more bigger than stress that we need to be aware of, or how much of a part does that actually play?
I think stress has the biggest effect on our health above and beyond anything else. And I suppose when you look at the impact, actual, like physiological stress, that our thoughts, the environment we find ourselves in. Now, food can be a source of stress. So when I think of the word stress, you know, to me, there's a lot of different types of stressors that our body could find itself under. Like the stresses alone of being, you know, removed from people. Social isolation is a huge physical and physiological stress. And the more vulnerable groups have been more impacted by this. So younger children and older adults, not to say us in the middle group are not affected, but you know, that what do they say about society, right? That how we look after our most vulnerable speaks volumes for the society that we find ourselves in. So the impact of stress is on a number of different levels, like even blue light, you know, people being on screens all day, or children being on blue screens all day is also a source of huge stress, both for our brain and for our nervous systems, which is why my children are not in school. They came out of school last year and they have been home educated. So I actually loved listening to your interview with Sarah Plummer yesterday. I was like, oh, great, yes. I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm doing it also.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like we have to protect them from, and I suppose back to that stress, the stress of being in that environment was having a real negative effect on children, not just mine. But what we know, and I suppose our government know exactly where stress hits, these targeted assaults on our health, our mental health and our spiritual health and our environmental health have been huge. But what the impact of stress is when we are perceiving a threat, our hypothalamus and our hippocampus are involved in secreting hormones like adrenal corticotropic hormone, which tells adrenaline and cortisol to be pumped out by the adrenal glands, which are tiny little walnut organs that sit on top of your kidneys. And the impact of cortisol, this stress hormone, is to wear us down. But the impact on our physical brain is absolutely profound. Now, I'll talk a little bit about the food side of things in a moment, but stress has a huge impact on suppression of our immune system. So the fear and stress response means that the parts of the brain involved in pumping out these hormones are now overactive. And the negative effect of these cortisol and stress hormones, if they're of a chronic nature, like we're designed to have an acute stress, like back in caveman days, we'd, you know, protect our family, run back to the cave and all was well. And we'd go back into rest and digest, which is parasympathetic chill mode. We're not designed to be in that 99.9% of the time. But what we know now is that our brains are physically shrinking. So stress atrophies the entire brain. It literally shrinks it. And I think about this for a minute. The more stress we're under, the less executive function we have, the less problem-solving capacities we have, and we're a lot less likely to mobilize efforts to keep ourselves well or to rise up and speak out. And what stress hormones also do, if of a chronic nature, which let's admit it, it's been that way for over 2 years, it promotes brain inflammation, and that inflammation impacts function. So it's actually wearing down the blood-brain barrier, and this is a really precious barrier. It protects our brain from infectious agents, including viruses, whether they come from outside or from inside our bodies. So they need us chronically stressed to keep what's going. Chronic stress will actually reduce our immune system's ability to make immune complexes, like it's called NF-kappa B, but this is the very stress immune chemical that helps fight infection. So when stress goes up, this goes down. But guess what remediates that? Spending time in nature. So they locked us up, they locked us in, and they knew it would affect our immune system. So there's that component of it. It's an immune suppressor. But also what can happen is high levels of chronic stress, cortisol, the hormone, impacts melatonin. And melatonin is, not sure how much people know about it, but it's our sleep chemical. And it's only secreted in the dark, and it's only secreted at night. But it's also secreted more readily to get us into a deep sleep. If we've not been on screens too late at night, the impact of blue light is huge and kids are more susceptible. But during the day, if we've been very stressed, if we're feeling unresourced, if we haven't eaten in a way that keeps our blood sugar stable, and I can talk about that a little bit more if you'd like me to in a minute, then at nighttime, our capacity to make melatonin, which builds our immune system, cleans out all the junk in our brain, regenerates immune cells. Melatonin is like the moon, and during the day, cortisol is like the sun. So we just need the delicate balance of the right amounts of both. So sleep problems are a big, even though people may have problems sleeping already, during the pandemic, I've yet to meet someone who hasn't seen their sleep not change. And sleep suppression by stress hormones is having a direct effect on our immune system. So it's a little bit like the word stress. Yes, it physically changes our body. It physically affects our immune system. And that's what they need, right? This target, the target was so well choreographed. Being outside, being in nature, being in the sun, being with family, community, and, you know, sharing. We share microbes with our dogs in our house, right? We share microbes with the people in our homes. So the more isolated we are, the less resilient we are. So there is those impacts, and that stress hormone, cortisol, completely throws us into almost like a pre-diabetic type 2 state. So then we're more likely to reach for the high sugar, ultra processed foods, because our blood body is in a state of almost like hypoglycemia. And that could drive anxiety. So sometimes it's a bit like when we're stressed, we know what we should be eating, but we're often then less likely to eat that food because of the raging hormonal ups and downs in our body, where our brain is going, emergency, emergency, get me something quick. So it's a little bit like a vicious cycle. I hope that makes a bit of sense.
I'm laughing as you're talking, because you're talking to me. I mean, my hormones must be all over the place. I am a strange kind of individual. I do a lot of things that are very beneficial for my body, but I almost sabotage myself by a lack of sleep, by getting too worked up about things, by eating absolute garbage at night. By the way, it's like a switch goes off with me after 9 p.m. I could go all day and eat as clean as you like the cleanest eater ever. But see, come 9 or 10 o'clock at night, it's like I go hunting for garbage, hunting for sugar, hunting for crisps. It is unbelievable. But if you were to set them in front of me right now, even if I was really hungry, I wouldn't even touch them. And by the way, I'm sorry to keep referring back to this. Another pub in Conceal. This is stuck in my head now. Thank you very much. There's one in the main street. Am I right about this? Called the Lord Kinsale. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, the Lord Kinsale. Yeah, it's on the back. So it's on a street called Main Street, but it's actually one of the back streets.
Sorry about that. But listen, you've stuck this in my head. I'm going to be trying to remember. Now, this isn't bad from memory. This has come back 25 odd years ago. But that's the last one I'm going to throw at you, the Lord Kinsale. I'm going to say it's a shout out to them, because listen, there's people tuning in from all over the place. I recommend you go to Conceal for a break. It's a beautiful place. It's an old place. Fantastic restaurants, fantastic people, lovely atmosphere. And of course, if you have indigestion problems or gut problems, you can drop into Karen Ward's clinic, Karen Ward Optimum Health, and check out our website, kwoptimumhealth.ie. Now, I want to ask you about this business here, about chemicals, okay? This is something I've been thinking about, and this is something, again, I maybe do that's a good thing without being aware of it. You talked about hand sanitizers. People are pumping tubs of chemicals onto their hand. They're rubbing it in unnecessarily. Somebody has said to me about, you know, shampoo, for example. Now, personally speaking, I keep my hair clean. I wash it through with warm water every day, but I only use shampoo maybe once every 2 weeks maximum, maybe even once a month, okay? And people are like, oh, that's disgusting. I'm like, no, my hair's in pretty good condition. It's kind of oily, but that's not a bad thing. It means I don't have to put lots of gel and crap in it to get it to sit a certain way. I could just literally stick my fingers in it and it just sits there and it doesn't stink and it's not too bad. Is shampoo a good thing or a bad thing? Or if it's not great, how often should we be using it, or should we be using like alternatives to what are being sold in the like Boots or these chemist shops? What do you think about that? That's just something off the top of my head. No pun
intended.
You're fine.
So I think everybody washes way too much, okay? Because we have microbes on our skin. And like when they did this human microbiome genome analysis, they sequenced the whole human microbiome. And what they were really quickly found out is we're more microbes than man. We're 10% human. There's even a book being written, we're 10% human. We're 90% microviruses and bacteria. We have a microbial cloud around us. We have different microbes in our armpit than we have up our nose, than we have on the back of our arm, than we have behind our ears, than we have on the top of our head or in between our toes. Mm-hmm. And each little habitat, think of it as like mini Amazon rainforests, is very closely regulated by all the microbes that live there to keep that area safe, protected, and not vulnerable to the outside world. And some microbes in those areas produce more oil and sebum, and some are a bit more drying, right? So it's like different landscapes of Amazon subforests all around your body. Mm-hmm. But to the chemical, right? If you come into the Amazon and start spraying up the place up with new man-made chemicals, there's going to be impacts on diversity. So I can't answer any question like yes or no, it has to be, but what about the microbes? Overwashing with toxic like phthalates, parabens, sodium lauryl sulfate, look out for SLS, sodium lauryl sulfate, is absolutely harmful to our health, harmful to our children's health, excuse me. So I do prefer natural products like Dr. Bronner's. You can buy a massive liter of it and you need the tiniest amount to make soap, wash your counters with it. You can wash your dogs in it. You can wash yourself in it. But I think less is more. And yes, it's fine to be hygienic, but those like this 5,000 new man-made chemicals coming into our environment every year, and we don't have the genetics to be able to deal with all these chemicals. And that's where our genetics come in. So some of us, including me, I'm very environmentally sensitive. So if someone is like, if I'm walking down the road and I can smell the fabric softener if it's bold or fairy, and I nearly get sick because I have hyper tuned up sense of smell. And I believe that that's because my own capacity to detoxify, we have detox enzymes, thousands of them. I have a deletion in my genetics. So way back when, I didn't need these genes to protect me from man-made chemical toxins because it was probably serene and clean and less toxic. So long-winded answer to go as natural as you can without becoming a total tree hugger, right? No offense against anybody who never washes, right? But, you know, natural, Dr. Bronner's, your local health food store, even the supermarkets, hate and all that you want to say, supporting big industry or big conglomerates. But so check your back. First thing, check for SLS. That would be the most important one, especially for young girls.
So basically, that's kind of my approach, whether or not I was intentionally doing it or not. I am hygienic, you know, I don't stink, but I don't, there's this almost programmed response in the morning. You have to jump into the shower. You have to scrub yourself from head to toe with these, you know, scented soaps. Then you have to wash your hair every day. Then you get out and you blow dry it. And then you spray yourself with deodorants full of aluminium and different things like that. And then out you go into the world. As much as it seems like it's the right thing to do because everybody else is doing it, you don't necessarily have to go to that degree. You could just simply stand under warm running water and, you know, use a little bit of natural soap and go sparingly on the shampoo. You don't have to do it, and you'll still get through life just fine. I've spent a lot of time in Africa, in rural areas where obviously they don't have pharmaceutical outputs or products. They use leaves. They use natural products. They wash every day. They're clean people. They don't have to be stocking up on deodorants and toothpaste and different things they got. There's a tribe in northwest Kenya called the Turkana tribe, and they're constantly cleaning their teeth with little twigs that they break off, and they have a little stick they call eshikhon, and they're just constantly cleaning in between their teeth with broken off little twigs from trees that acts like a floss and a toothpaste mixed in with their natural saliva. Those people don't have dentists and they don't have teeth problems, so they must be doing something right. Would that be fair enough?
Absolutely. You know, we have a whole situation, don't we, of over-intervention. Like, because what would we know ourselves in trying to keep ourselves healthy, right? What would we learn from tribes and from ancient, how our great-grandparents and grandparents would have done it? And like, as you said, like in Africa, like they've done amazing research in sub-Saharan Africa, the Hadza tribe even. And the foods that they eat, they don't have inflammatory bowel disease. Like, they don't suffer from IBS. And they don't have this psoriasis and atopic eczema and dermatitis that Western civilizations have. And they've tracked diabetes. Like the diseases of modern day are not found in equatorial regions or sub-Saharan Africa. And the further away from the equator you get, the more likelihood you have of autoimmunity developing. We have vitamin D deficiency, of course, which we know so much about now after COVID. But the wisdom there is, and this is over intervention, and even to the point of, you know, in psychology, there is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM was our Bible way back then. And it's been the latest version is DSM-5, but they've removed just a little bit on over intervention for diagnosing and medicating. They've removed grief. So basically, how would I describe it? They don't allow you to grieve now for longer than 2 weeks after a bereavement before getting a diagnosis of depression. So like, it's totally nuts. So it's opened the door to medicalization of normal grief and sadness, to encourage overprescription of things we actually don't need. And in fact, a lot of people I meet are sad, but they're not depressed. They're just sad. And
blue, that's why you would say they're a little bit blue.
Yeah. And like, so again, you know, over intervention, you know, create the problem. Here we're coming in on our horses and white, you know, shining armor, provide the solution. But there's an over medicalization of everything. And just, you know, like even hygiene has fallen into that. Mm-hmm. And it's this sanitization nonsense. I remember once ever my children sanitized their hands once in a shop and she wouldn't serve me unless they put the gel on, and we all got burns on our hands, and that was it. First time and last time, never again.
And you know, it's a big tub. It's a big tub. It's a big see-through tub with a dispenser on top. There's no ingredients list, at least where I live. The supermarkets used to bring them in massive tubs. So these people were just blindly going in, squirting this unknown chemical and rubbing it all over their hands and doing the same to their kids. There does seem to have been a real disconnect, Karen, over the last, certainly over the last 2 years, with what people are prepared to put on their bodies or into their bodies without asking questions. We're going to take another very quick break before we wrap this up. Another quick ad break, and when we come back, I just want to look at this conditioning business, because I know you're into the psychology aspect of things as well. How much have we been conditioned to just blindly do what everybody else is doing, this herd mentality business? I think it's killing us in more ways than one, but we'll talk about that when we come back. This is TNT Radio. Please do not go away.
Bill Gates loves tyranny. Ever wonder what country is the model for the world to follow, according to Bill Gates? Australia, which led the most oppressive lockdowns next to China.
Is it possible to prevent the next pandemic?
Yes, if every country does what Australia did, then you wouldn't be calling it a pandemic.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yes, that's right. Bill Gates' idea of the way to prevent the next pandemic is to follow the model of COVID lockdowns, quarantine camps, militarization, people being forced off beaches, endless contact tracing, forced masking, forced vaccinating. One of the most oppressive lockdowns on the planet, next to China, occurred in Australia. That's what Bill Gates wants for your future. Now you know what Bill Gates and the World Health Organization have in mind for you. Be afraid, be very afraid, and then get angry and fight back. For the Morano Minute, I'm Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
You better lock up your sons when the ex-girls hit town. We're an irresistible force. We have the power to get whatever and whoever we want. Let's go. Time to find somewhere hot. We cut through the traffic. No one can stand in our way. Wait there. Don't move a muscle, the paramedic said.
The driver said I just ran out in front of him. I can't remember anything, but I've been told I'll be on crutches for a while, and my miniskirt-wearing days are over.
Too much alcohol makes you feel invincible when you're most vulnerable. At least 77% of pedestrians killed in road accidents at night had been drinking. Alcohol. Know your limits.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
Okay, we're talking health, we're talking nutrition, we're talking stress, we're talking chemicals, we're talking optimization, we're talking all sorts of, we're talking alcohol, a little bit of alcohol, a little bit of pubs and restaurants in the beautiful place called Kinsale in Ireland. I'm talking with Karen Ward. We only have 13 minutes left, which is a shame. We could talk more, I feel, but I'm sure you have work to do and plans to see, and I have business to take care of as well. But hopefully, in case I don't get saying this, hopefully this hasn't been too stressful for you. And maybe we could make this something that we do on a semi-regular basis every month or so, just to keep people in the loop and keep you sharp and focused and to educate people as to what's actually going on. Because I'm learning a little bit today, let us say to anybody else. And for that, I appreciate your input, Karen. We talked about cleanliness. They say it's next to godliness. You know, by all means, keep yourself clean. Don't let the bugs accumulate on your skin. You know, wash yourself down, but don't overdo it. You don't need to shampoo every day with chemicals produced in warehouses and factories and who knows where. You don't need to be lathering it on all the time so much with the soap. You don't need to be spraying yourself. Tell me a little bit, actually briefly, deodorants, okay? Deodorants, they've got a little bit of bad press. Also, I noticed, and I use them actually, because if I didn't, you know, mankind would not be thankful to me for that. But sure, have a deodorant. And they say on the bottle or on the spray can, it gives you 72-hour protection. Okay, so if you do the mathematics, that's 3 days. That would insinuate if I spray myself all over with that, I can forego getting washed, etc. But in reality, we don't do that. What are they putting into those bottles or those spray cans that give us 72 days protection against sweat? What is in there that we need to know about?
There's a lot of unrecognizable chemicals, but aluminium or aluminum is one of them. And in my day, it was Mitchum. Like, I used to go to school with a bag of Impulse, you know, a different color for every day of the week. And now I'm so sensitive. What if I put a bit of cream on my face or a toxic chemical perfumey cream on my skin, I can taste it in 10 minutes. I can taste it. So when we spoke earlier about you when you become sensitive, you start to notice things a bit better, or you might get quite a strong reaction. So when you clean up your life, like, I didn't always live like this. I didn't always eat well. I consumed plenty of pints of Murphy's back in my day. But now I'm a different person. I saw the light and my body gave up and said, we don't like what you're doing anymore. You need to change. But we become, the more of them we use, the less we notice them. But these chemicals are detected in the bloodstream very, very quickly. And we have hundreds of thousands of detox compound chemicals that we can lean on and depend on to help detoxify these elements. But 72 hours, that ain't natural. And there's strong associations. Of course, we all know about baby talc and Johnson & Johnson, but with, you know, increased risks of breast cancer, not just in women. So, you know, natural as much as you can. I used to send my husband, he'd kill me for saying this, to work to the building site. He's a builder, so he sweats a lot, with a half a lime in his lunchbox. I said, he's like, for Christ's sake, it's not working. I was like, just use it. So he did it for a while to appease me. The lime got kicked out and he went back to something in between, less toxic, not so natural. But anyhow.
Well, tell me this. Here's a question, okay? Again, because I ask questions that I feel, you know, I am interested in and that maybe people that are listening are interested in too. And not everybody gets to talk to somebody like yourself every day without making an appointment or without doing a lot of research. So if you do keep yourself clean and you're not in a particularly laborious job and you are, you know, changing your clothes regularly or whatever you're doing, is there a need to be spraying yourself all over with, chemicals from the, I mean, you won't stink to high heavens. There may be a little odor after 24 hours, but it's, even then, it's not a particularly offensive odor. It's not like you're humming. No. You know what I mean? Is this not another sales pitch that we've been thrust upon to say, you need to shower every day, you need to squirt yourself? And someone else, by the way, someone made a very good point that the greatest marketing ploy in history was for a chemical company to take a bar of soap and say, how can we make more profit from this? I know, we'll liquidize it, we'll put it into a shower gel bottle and we'll charge 3 times as much for half as much product. And people run out and they buy it. And they squirt it all over themselves and it goes straight down the plug hole. Is this not just one big con job from the big pharma?
But it's another part of it. It's all part of it. When you see it, you see it. So I was the same, but our microbes are the microbes, as I said, and all the different niches are they're dying slowly because of all these chemical sprays. And ironically, the less of them we have, the more stinky we are. So stress sweat is different to normal sweat. So I don't know if you ever notice, if you're very anxious or worrying, your sweat smells differently because your microbes are going, oh, dude, he's stressed. And our microbes change when we're stressed. So if you're sitting on the computer and you're, you know, loving your job and you're not minding not being out and running marathon, whatever, you need less. And what I'd also say, there's some friggin' amazing up in Belfast natural companies down in the Republic that make gorgeous products that you just rub under your arm. Like, I use a natural product and it's literally shea butter, kale and clay and aromatherapy oils, and they actually are really, really good. So there's a lot of different options, but it is, we don't know ourselves what to do, so we need to listen to what we're being told to do. Ash conformity, you know, the whole pandemic, but I think these psychological experiments have been done for so many years, haven't they, to sell. Remember, Teflon, right? We could spend a whole hour talking about frying pans and cookware and what that's doing to us. So Yeah, I'm with you. Stop.
I really, really, really need to sit down and seriously assess, you know, what I'm exposing myself to and allowing my family to be exposed to through simple, blind, herd mentality, compliance, and habit. Because if you do something for 30 to 60 days, it becomes a habit, whether that be a good thing or whether it be a bad thing. So if you're reaching for, and let's face it, people have been doing this for decades upon decades upon decades. How ingrained is that behavior within our systems to go to these chemical products? Because that's the done thing. And it's hard enough to break a habit when you've been doing it for a month, let alone, 20, 30, 40, 50 years maybe? And then you can feel, well, actually, that this is maybe a little bit kooky. Maybe this isn't, you know, for real. Well, how can all so many people have it wrong? That's why these companies are worth billions and we're not.
I know. It's true, but there's nothing more powerful. So like when I meet people, I do something called, I do a health assessment. I assess their dietary intake. I assess other symptoms. And I assess I listen to the story of how were you born? What was your mother's pregnancy like? And we go all the way back to understand the present moment of what led them to where they are now. And all the hits to the system, all the exposures, all the traumas, it's called the timeline of your life to where you are now. And within that assessment, you're looking at environmental, it's almost like an environmental impact assessment on toxin exposure. And you're collating it all on paper and you're like, holy crap, this person's burden is huge with regard to their health. And, you know, it's about taking pressure off the body. So a stressor can be a chemical stressor, an environmental stressor. Food is a stressor. Food is also a source of anti-stress. So if we're eating right, so, you know, the whole skin, I gave presentations to a company in the US 2 years ago on the gut skin microbiome. What goes on in our gut affects our skin. What we put in our skin affects our gut. There's all these axes of communication, the gut brain axis in mental health is huge. So what we put in our gut and feed our microbes, the chemicals that they make, mostly good, hopefully, depending on what we're eating, are signaling up to our brains via the nerve, that's called the vagus nerve, as to what the state of play is. How are things down in the base camp, you know? Should the brain respond in an anxious manner, in depression and anxiety, to give labels, because I hate labels, are now directly associated with imbalances in the guts. If you have IBS, which is another BS diagnosis, I could talk for 5 hours about IBS, is the brain is sensing feedback from the gut all the time on what the microbes are up to. So it's phenomenal stuff out there, but there are tests for it. I test people's urine for mycotoxins and toxins, mold in your house, black. I ask people, do you have any black in the corner? Aspergillus niger. So we could go on, and it's all like, oh no, we're doomed. There's toxins everywhere. Yes, there is. But the more internal resiliency that you have, if you get up in the morning and you know you're going to have a stressful day and you've been noticing your sleep going to pot or your skin, then protein and healthy fat are, you know, the minimum things to keep that blood sugar stable. And the kiddies, I see so many children in my clinic with, you know, concentration challenges and it's blood sugar. So what blood sugar means, I don't mean diabetes, but how we eat to stabilize things has the direct effect here, direct effect on skin, direct effect in everything. So when we wake in the morning, we don't feel like eating. We just naturally reach for the coffee because we've been told that. I mean, I love coffee, by the way, but good coffee's good and bad coffee's bad. So, you know, it's just... It's such a huge topic, isn't it? Like, and the other irony of all of this, the WHO, guess what they define health as? It's not just the absence of disease, but it's a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. How do you think they're doing? Here we are.
WHO, that's another rabbit hole altogether. Listen, let me say this. We're coming up to time before we get, run over time myself. I just want to redirect people or direct people to you in case they're just tuning in now. You can link up with Karen Ward at Karen Ward Health on Twitter. Let me make a suggestion to you, by the way. You need to put your website address on your Twitter profile because it's not there. Okay, I had to Google you and go separately. So add in kwoptimumhealth.ie, which is Karen's website address. I would advise you to add that to your Twitter feed because you'll get a lot more people directed to you. And if anybody's listening, This may seem a little bit overwhelming. It is for me. I'm hearing and nodding with everything you're saying, going, hell, I need to do this, this, and this. But if you can even take one thing away from this today, if you can reduce your screen time, if you can connect more with nature, if you can clean up your diet a little bit, if you can use less deodorants, if you can not wash your hair as much, if you can just do one thing, it will have a positive effect. And then over time, I would say that this is something that you can build up to rejig your life, to restructure what you eat. And soon you too will be glowing like Karen is glowing at me on the Zoom screen. Karen Ward, it's been an absolute pleasure and certainly was well worth the wait to speak with you. You and I will stay in touch. I want to appreciate your time and your input and your attitude and your, yeah, it's been very good for me and informative. I can't speak for anyone else out there. Karen Ward, thank you very much for your time and we will stay in touch. Listeners, have a wonderful weekend, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope it's nice. Stay tuned to TNT Radio. I shall be back on Monday with more Locked and Loaded. Have a wonderful weekend.